Hi guys, welcome to episode 411 of Conversation Street for the week of the 23rd to the 25th of March 2020. And we're coming at you early this week because, sad times, there's no Coronation Street on Friday.
Yep, sad but times.
It does mean that we get to have a Friday night off at least, which is lovely. It's Friday afternoon at the moment. We were going to record it yesterday, but we're both really, really tired yesterday evening.
Yesterday, I fell asleep.
But yeah, so we've got up, so hopefully this should be able to be uploaded by Friday evening so that you can, I don't know, enjoy it and experience it instead of watching Coronation Street.
We're having pizza tonight, homemade pizza. I'm so excited.
Yes, tasty stuff. Everything, and the sun is shining. It's lovely, lovely.
My hands are cold. We're freezing.
We're freaking freezing. Really, really cold at the moment. Our house.
I did not realise this until very recently, how cold the house gets, because I'm here all by myself.
Gemma works from home all the time, and I'm here at the moment, and it's absolutely freaking freezing in this house. And you look outside the window, and it's nice, glorious sunshine out there, but none of it seems to be getting in here. So, you know, if you hear my teeth chattering or whatever, then I do apologise.
I'm used to it. Well, literally 12 hours. Well, no. What was it like? 9 hours of the day. My hands are just cold. There's no getting around it.
But like, I feel the cold more than you do usually. So just imagine how bad I feel. I'm like a little old woman.
But feel the cold
I feel it in my bones.
Because when you're sitting down, it's definitely... This isn't oppression Olympics, Michael. You don't get to claim that you're colder than I am and I've been putting up with this for 9 years.
Well, it's all right. We're sitting on the sofa now. We've got the heating on, even though it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We've got a throw over our knees.
Yeah.
And I don't know, if the cat wants to come in and sit next to us and warm us up, then she's perfectly welcome to.
I want to get one of those. I'm sure these exist, like a heated mouse.
Yes.
Do they exist?
I don't know.
Have I invented something?
I don't know. Yeah, I'd have that. That's the worst bit. When I've been working, I've got like most of me this week has been wrapped up in throw
really
with a little hand poking out
really
with the mouse on. It's been freaking freezing. But anyway.
I was going to say, the other sad thing is we've been playing Animal Crossing a lot because we just got that game. And my thumbs get cold. Because you have to expose your thumbs when you're twiddling the knobs.
Yeah.
The rest of my hands not too bad.
I've been having fun. Has anybody else listening been playing Animal Crossing on the Switch? And if you have, then you're very welcome to come and visit our
island.
Yes, we've already had Coronation Street superstar George Banks
come to visit our
town a couple of times this week. And we've been over to his town as well. So
I have
been. Lots of fun. But you've seen it.
I have seen it. Yeah, had a party, didn't you? Because you can't play at the same time. Because we only have one Switch. We're a one Switch household.
Yeah.
Which is apparently better than some people, because you can't buy them at the moment.
Anyway, Gemma, can you warm my cockles with a Corrie quiz for this week?
I
assume you've gone for the whole week rather than just the 23rd to the 25th.
And I just have to tell you that it was very easy to do this quiz this week, but I don't know if that makes it boring.
Let's find out.
We'll find out. You've got to spice things up by maybe getting a few wrong.
I'll do my best.
It was easy for you to do. It was easy for me to put together.
Okay, go on then.
So this is based on things that happened between the 23rd and the 7th of March, years ending in a 0 and a 5. And I have gathered my information from the ever amazing resource, coronationstreet.fandom.com, or as it is known, Coropedia. First question, 23rd of March 1970. Ray Langton comes back from the Buxton Recruit... How do you spell... from the Buxton Recuperation Clinic to recover from the bus crash, which took place where?
Lake District.
Correct.
Yeah. We'll be able to watch that soon because we're on 1969 of our DVD at the moment, so...
Very exciting, yeah.
Corrie in colour as well?
I don't know. I don't like Corrie in colour. Newfangled, it'll never catch on.
Well, maybe is there a setting on our TV where we can turn
the
colour off?
I think we should just turn it off because I don't want to know. One of my favourite things, is, especially with Elsie Tanner, is to look at her outfit and go, what colour could that be?
I know, I wonder that as well sometimes.
Yeah. Like, she's got a really gorgeous cape at the moment, and it could be grey, could be white, could be beige, could be a nice fawn.
Mm.
I don't know.
Could be like Joseph Technicolor Dreamcoat for all we know.
I know. Well, I think I can tell it's all one colour.
Oh.
So unless she wears it when it turns the colour, I will never know.
And you'll finally find out whether she actually is redhead. Or whether...
She could have just been getting away with pretending.
Right, come on, next question. 23rd
of March, 2005. It's Tommy Harris's funeral. It's
going to
be over.
It's Tommy Harris saga.
Just shut up. He breaks... You liked it at the time.
I know.
It was exciting. It was very exciting. I'm sorry that my questions are boring.
Go on.
It's Tommy Harris's funeral.
Yeah.
What date was it?
Didn't you just say? Yeah, I wasn't listening.
I was just checking to see if you were listening.
24th of March. No. 23rd of March. No. I wasn't listening at all.
I'm making that an official question.
Oh, no.
Right, it's Tommy Harris's funeral. Who breaks into a full confession during the service?
It's got to be Angela.
Is that your final answer?
Oh!
No, it's not. It was Katie.
Oh, did she? I thought she was dead at this point. So the saga still isn't finished yet.
Apparently.
I suppose Angela hasn't got anything to confess.
Information at the moment. Wrong. 24th of March. Well, she put the spanner in the...
I know, I was like, when you said who breaks, I'm thinking, oh, is this going to be Angela breaking into the coffin?
Who breaks out of the coffin? My God, that's a good question.
Saying, oh, you left this in there, love. You might need this.
This wasn't in my will. I don't want this in here. I know I spent all my life in the shop, but...
Next.
24th of March, 1965.
Oh, yes.
We didn't watch this.
Oh.
Emily Nugent is getting driving lessons from which person who turns out to have a suspended licence?
I'm sure that Emily's driving lessons have been mentioned.
Yeah, they have been in it. We watched her getting a driving lesson. And I know there's one person that we know helped her out. But think about Emily. Think about who she hanged around with. Who might be
Leonard
teaching.
Swinley.
Yes.
Oh,
that was fantastic. Very... Too many clues, I thought, there. Perhaps.
Thank you. That's right. I've got the last couple wrong, so I needed a bit of a hint.
Right. 24th of March, 1980. Bette Lynch has a fight in the Rovers with which rival siren over lorry driver Dan Johnson?
Rival siren?
Yeah.
1980?
Yeah. Well, rival... Well, I think she's a siren. Always in my heart.
I don't know. I've just got Elsie Tanner in my head now. Is it Elsie Tanner?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I can't remember what year she left. She kind of had that long left after that.
24th of March, 1995. Are you telling me I've only got 10 years left of...
Yeah. Go.
All right. Why is there a time limit on this or something?
No.
Sorry, have you got something else to do this afternoon?
No.
What are you rushing me for?
I'm not sorry. I'm just interested to know about the 1995 question because they're up to 1995 on ITV3 at the moment, but I don't know which month they're in, so I've either just watched this or just be about to watch it.
I've heard rumours.
Okay,
about this.
Go on.
24th of March, 1995. Tracy Barlow gets rushed to hospital, but what happened?
Overdose.
Of?
Ecstasy, innit?
Yeah, easy good. They're bad. They're bad, everybody. 24th of March, 2000. The police tell Natalie Barnes some bad news about her son, but what is it?
They just dug up his body in Victoria Street.
Yeah.
Because I remember that from last week's
quiz. Yeah, good job. 25th of March, 2015. Who does Steve get engaged to?
Michelle.
Yeah.
Bad move.
I put a question mark after the answer, but that is definitely the answer. 26th of March, 1975. Deirdre Hunt fixes a date for her wedding... But who is it to?
Ray Langton.
No.
What?
Willie Walker.
Oh, that's a trick question. She never married him in the end, did she? No, you're right.
I said fix as a date.
I know, I remember. She was engaged to him for a bit.
I thought that was a good fact.
That was a good
fact. Willie Walker is the son of Annie and...
Yeah.
What's his face?
Jack.
Oh. 26th of March, 2010. What does Audrey reveal to Rita about Lewis?
2010?
Yeah.
That he's an escort.
Yes, he is an escort.
Fantastic.
And that is the end of the questions. So
I didn't do too badly after
one,
that wobbly
two,
start.
4, 5, 6, 7 out of 8, 9, 10.
Okay, I'll take that. Birthdays. Who's got a birthday coming up?
We've got on the 28th of March. Beverly Collard.
Why did you say it like that?
She plays Les McDonald.
Les McDonald.
Yeah. Nakai Sanderson. Candy Stoke. Look, I'm trying to entertain myself.
Okay, go on.
So, it's Beverly Carroll's birthday. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Happy birthday to Bev.
Bev Liz. Nikki Sanderson, Candice.
And she's also in Hollyoaks.
Happy birthday. 29th of March, Julie Goodyear.
Oh.
Bert Lynch. And Debbie Rush, Anna Windass.
These are some good birthdays this week.
A pair of windbags.
Yeah.
31st of March, director Mary McMurray.
Okay.
1st of April, Joan Francis, who's Doc Greenhouse, and Liam Burstow plays Alex Warner.
Ah.
2nd of April, John Thompson, who plays Jesse Chadwick, and Andrew Wyman, who plays Kirk Sutherland. This is a really good week.
This is a good
3rd of April, this. Mark Bayliss, who plays Bob Ronovan. No, Rob Donovan.
Happy birthday to all those lovely curry folks.
Yes.
And that's about it. So are you ready to get to just four episodes of Corrie we had to talk about this week. So are you ready to get on with some street talk?
I am more than ready.
Yeah, let's do it. Right, so after two brilliant weeks of Coronation Street, I thought that so far this week, all of this week is a bit so-so, I thought, this week. It was all right, but nothing that really got my pulse racing. But you never know. Now if we talk about it now, it might bring back some better memories. How did you feel about it?
This week, I don't know. I think I wasn't paying attention again.
Why not?
I don't know.
You do a podcast about this, and you know, I get distracted.
But I can sit and watch a scene, and you can say what happened, and I'll say, oh, blah 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 blah, and then I get to the end of the week and look on Twitter, and people are going, oh, I can't believe so-and-so did that. And I'm like, what?
Well, let's see if this refreshes your memory. Because
this is really
it's not
just
be
a recap episode for me. I can read stuff out there. I can tell everybody what's happened that you've written down.
We had a bit more of the Shona the Loner story this week. Shona's still staying off out of the picture, but Alina is definitely jumping back into her place.
What I did do is I did look on Coropedia for the recaps for Monday, and I read them yesterday. But they didn't have a recap for yesterday.
Oh, well, never mind.
I mean, Wednesday.
I try
my hardest. It's just not very good.
But if we're watching an episode of Coronation Street and I think that Gemma's not paying attention, if I say, are you watching Gemma? Yeah. You just bite my head off, don't
you? Michael, leave me alone. I can do what I want.
Yeah. So we'll see. So we've got the Shona the Loner storyline. We have a new storyline title incoming to do with Gemma's postnatal depression, The Winter Blues. We will have a bit more of the Stillwater carry-on, which is getting more and more like a carry-on every week, I think.
All of this. I think the Shona the Loner storyline is the one that I didn't get.
Well, I will tell you. Okay. Then we've got a bit more of the Evelyn stuff, which I still don't have a good storyline title for, and a slight extension to the Yaz lighting story too. So starting off with Shona the Loner, Nick finds out at the beginning of Monday's episode from a letter that David has arranged to go and see Clayton. Remember, we found out last week that Clayton has been in contact with Shona because he's pretty much the only person that she remembers.
Let's just recap.
She has forgotten that he's a massive wrong-un and he took a hostage and tried to stab her to death last year.
Yes.
But
very good recap.
So David wants to go and, you know, tell him to stop it, please.
Stop it!
But Nick isn't sure it's a good idea, but he goes anyway. And this is the first time we've seen Clayton in... it was a year that the hostage drama took place, wasn't it? And he's just as cocky as ever.
I like about Corey in recent years is that when somebody goes to prison, that's not necessarily the last
time. No, it's not the end, is it? No.
It really seems that some characters who are in prison you see more often than people that are regular cast members.
I know. I wasn't sure whether we'd see Clayton again after last year, but he's back, and as I say, he's as cocky as ever. Okay, and he thinks that it is absolutely wonderful that Shona's forgotten David, and he wastes no time in telling him exactly how he's been filling in some of the gaps.
Ugh, what a cad.
Just playing with his mum's mind. Just
mean.
For kicks. Meanwhile, Nick is telling Gail about this back at home just as David gets back from the prison, and he explains what happens to everybody with Clayton and everything. And Nick says, look, maybe I'll go over to see Shona as well. So he takes the trek over across the Pennines, I'm not very good at my mountains.
Where
those
mountains
down the middle of the country. My geography is not so good. He goes over to Leeds. It's 2 hours drive just to go and see Shona. But then the lady at the place that Shona's at, the hospital, says, sorry, Shona doesn't want to see you. I know you've taken a long journey here. But
you should have phoned first.
And we can't stop her seeing Clayton either, or hearing from Clayton either, because despite being a nasty piece of work, he is at least helping her to remember a bit about her past. And he's filling in some of the gaps. So, we're just going to carry on the way things have been, if that's okay with you. there's the little scene with Johnny and David in the pub, which doesn't really come to much. Johnny sees that David's looking a bit miserable and offers to lend a friendly ear, but David is not in the mood for that kind of...
Shut up!
He'd rather...
Just drink his beer, leave me alone.
And I'm thinking he'd rather have the other kind of sympathy, which Alina Johnny, offers I him later
some,
on in
some
the week.
Other sympathy. And Johnny's like, I'm a married man, mate.
Nick then get back to the street. There's an awful lot of toing and froing on Monday's episode. He's got a message from Shona. Yeah. Not only does she not want to see David anymore, which is what she's been saying for months anyway, she doesn't want to move back to Weatherfield because Lise is awesome and she wants a divorce.
I can't believe it.
It's true. Well, I don't know. We haven't seen Shona saying any of this, so it could just be that Nick could be making it up just for kicks.
Nick is quite prone to the old Porky Pie.
He does. He's been known to cause trouble before, old Nick. He's been known to, you know, butt heads with his younger brother. But yeah, I think in this case it's true. So Wednesday, David has got a right cob on in the cafe, and he's having a chat with Maria over breakfast, and he's basically in denial about it all. Maria said, oh, so this is bad news about Shona, isn't it? She wants to get divorced. And David's like, well, you know, whatever. We'll just have to... Yeah, we're going to get divorced. It's over. He doesn't want to talk about it. And as I say, he's definitely in denial.
Yeah, he's very dismissive, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just like, whatever.
It's not really happening.
Like, he's not trying, basically, because he doesn't want to...
What?
He doesn't want to, you know...
What do you think he's doing?
Well, it seems like he doesn't want to have to deal with the issue. And right. So if he just accepts it, it'll go away. Of course he cares, but he doesn't want to talk to anyone about it. He didn't want to talk to Johnny on Wednesday. He doesn't really want to talk to Maria now.
Do you think that he thinks that if he pretends he doesn't care, he might believe it?
Maybe. It might make him... Mm. Yeah, might make it feel more palatable to him, I suppose.
Didn't like her anyway. Her hair is too big.
Speaking of hair, we also had a weird scene with Brian there showing up when he's trying to book an appointment with David or something, doesn't he? He apparently wants to grow his beard out because this is the in thing at the moment. We've got Billy with a beard, we've got Nick with a beard, we've got David with a beard. Beards are fashionable, apparently. Yeah, Imran setting the fashion trend of Weatherfield, I think.
You know that there's some kind of economic link with how high skirts go, depending on the economy.
No.
Is there something to do like that to do with bearded men? When men are like, is it like when you're insecure about your masculinity, you grow a beard or?
Maybe.
What could it be?
Maybe, I don't.
Do you think men feel?
I'm obviously very, very secure in my masculinity, although I haven't had a shave today or yesterday, so I'm getting a little bit stubbly here.
Maybe you should grow a beard.
I would love you to grow a beard.
Brian
thinks that a beard will give him the look of George Clooney, but David says the only superstar that he's going to end up looking like is Hagrid. Harsh.
Hagrid's all right.
He finally...
Two words, to be honest.
Hagrid makes me think of like Mr. Twit as well.
I bet
all the sweets that Brian steals from the cabin, he'd end up digging them out.
Good,
actually.
You can keep some Werther's Originals in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't get Werther's Originals caught in your beard hair.
Why?
You won't get them out, will you?
No, wrapped up.
Oh, okay, that's fine then.
I think he is.
If you're sucking on a Werther's Original, it drops out into your beard. No, it's like all coming off.
I was just thinking of alternative storage solutions because men only have pockets.
Maybe that's what I'm missing out on a trick. Maybe that's what all men do. I don't know.
Maybe
anyway, David goes along to the community gardens where he finds Alina there looking very pensive about this and that. I think she's been trying to avoid Emma this week because of the whole Seb situation.
As well.
Yes.
Seb has to decide which beautiful woman he wants.
Well, he's already decided that he's going out with Emma, but we've been saying about
him. I don't think he really has.
He's obviously not as into her as Emma would like. So Alina's just trying to avoid everybody, and she eventually gets talking to David about this and that, and about isn't life terrible at the moment?
Terrible.
He ends up texting Nick because Alina's supposed to be back at work in the factory in the afternoon.
I forgot this. Alina works in the factory.
Yes.
She works in an administration role. She's not a. Hmm.
She's not a Nicola Stitcher, no. So David texts Nick from her phone to say that she's ill so that they can have more time together.
Right.
Emma is, meanwhile, fairly worried about how things were left between her and Alina. This is
Emma is,
and she says, "Seb, can you go and chat with Alina? Can you go and find her and see if we're cool?" So Seb goes over to the factory where he runs into Sean and says, "Oh, Alina's not in at the moment. She's off sick." So then he goes over to the flat and finds her with a tongue down David's throat.
And this is when everybody knows that I wasn't paying attention to the storyline, because I did a tweet saying that they had slept together and they hadn't.
They didn't. It was just a kiss.
But everyone was very quick to correct me, so great job, guys.
He's got his top off. And I don't know whether, and I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, I don't know whether everyone answers the same, but whenever David takes his top off, I always have to check that they've put on the Tina tattoo on his right arm just for consistency. But yeah,
Jack P. Shepherd surely gets paid enough that he could get that tattoo permanently done in tribute to the riches that Corey's earned him.
Yes, so they haven't slept together, Gemma. They're just having a snog. That's what I call a French plait.
Oh!
And Seb's like,
I was just going to say this to everyone. This is a handy hint. If you ever have a question about something on Twitter, just post the wrong answer to the question that you have, and everyone will instantly correct you, so you'll know straight away.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. It's easy.
Good life tip there.
Yeah.
Anyway, Seb's like, "What the bloody hell are you doing here?"
Oh, gosh.
He's like saying that David's married and everything. Like, Alina clearly didn't know that David was married. I always find it weird when characters don't know something that the viewers know, if it's like common knowledge, because everybody, they're all such a bunch of gossips in Weatherfield. You think that like nothing is private.
We also think that everybody knows each other equally as well as we do, but obviously some people don't know anything.
Yeah.
So he must have taken his wedding ring. He did have a wedding ring, didn't he?
Yeah, he must have had a wedding ring. He must have taken it.
What a little.
I don't know. Maybe that's a little inconsistency.
Well, there. Alina would have known.
I would have just thought, because Alina's been back on the scene for quite a while now, you'd have thought that the story of the guy who lived next door to your workplace, whose wife is living in Leeds and she's been shot, I'd have thought that she'd have heard of that by now. I'd have thought that, you know, Eileen would have been gossiping about it.
If you had a new person turn up who knew the area, they turned up after Christmas, you'd be like, oh my god, especially considering she was around at Christmas. And you so lucky that you weren't here on Christmas Day. Guess what happened?
Yeah, I know. She had a lucky escape there, didn't she? Anyway,
I wouldn't call Alina lucky in particular.
She
other things.
She throws both David and Seb out, and Seb goes and has a little bit of a fume on the bench in the garden, and then makes his way to the pub where he's very. I asked you whether this is the right word. He's very brusque with Emma later because he's feeling very conflicted about seeing his ex-girlfriend splayed on top of David on the sofa, because he's obviously got some feelings for her and he doesn't know what to think, and he knows that he's not allowed to have those feelings because he's going out with beautiful Emma at the moment. And then David comes in and he's just as cocky as Clayton was early in the week. He's very proudly talking about you caught me with Alina, and Emma is not impressed by this. David basically goads Seb into punching him in the face. He says about, Alina's not interested in you anymore. He explains later. I'll get to that point. So,
do continue.
David tries to explain himself to Alina when he sees her later, but she's not interested at all in him. So that's kind of, it feels like there's not going to be any continuing romance there. Back at home, Emma asks Seb, what was that really about then? What's got you so... You know, why you got your knickers in a twist about this? And he says that he's not jealous about it, but she does not believe him, and gets all in a tears and says, "Like, I don't want you to stay here tonight.
Oh,
you go and find somewhere else to sleep, because I think you still fancy Alina."
Yeah.
And then this is at the very end of the episode. Nick quizzes David about his behaviour, and he says, "I just wanted to feel something. I wanted to feel." Yeah, this is why he wanted to feel pleasure with Alina. He wanted to feel pain and punching the god, because he's feeling so empty at the moment with everything that's going on with Shona. His life seems to have no spice in it.
Spice.
Nick says, "Look, you cannot give up on your marriage to Shona this easy."
Stop being
and
so
David's
really
like,
crazy.
"Well, you know, what's the point? I don't think she's ever going to recover from this. She's never going to remember me. I might as well move on." But when Nick goes home, we get to see a classic Jack P. Shepherd wobble and cry at the end of the episode. He has a few tears running down his nose, and that is how it was left.
Wobble and cry.
That is how it was left on Wednesday night. So Gemma, reactions to David and Alina, which we did pretty much predict last week, because, you know, when two characters who've never had anything to do with each other decide that they're going to talk to each other one week in the pub, the next week, you know that they're going to be at it in some way. I'm glad that they didn't actually sleep together, so he's not technically been completely unfaithful to Shona.
Can I just say something about Alina here? Remember when she was first sort of dating Seb, and how sweet and slow they took it?
They definitely, they didn't jump into bed straight away, did they?
We were saying about how great it was, and we really enjoyed that. Why was Alina in such a rush to get David into bed? It doesn't seem, it seems incredibly out of character for her, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't really think about that, but now you come to mention it.
I don't, obviously I'm not trying to say that you're like, it's bad if you want to do that, that's fine. But it is a nice refreshing change to have a character in the show who doesn't just jump into bed with everybody at the first sight. And now we've lost that character because they've just turned Alina into any other girl character in that situation, you know. It's interesting, it's more interesting to me in a soap when characters have different reactions to things, and Alina was unique in that she didn't just jump straight into bed.
I guess that she's kind of, maybe she's thinking, if I, you know, stake my claim on David, then there's absolutely going to be nothing that happens between me and Seb. She's looking for a way out of this situation that she's got herself caught into, and she doesn't want to be in a love triangle. And if she's got her own boyfriend, then maybe her feelings that I still think she does have for Seb will go away, is what she's hoping for.
Do you reckon?
I would say so.
Yeah, I guess so. And also, obviously, she was worried about getting into a relationship before, because, you know, she had
She was in all that stuff going on at the nail bar, the whole slavery thing.
She was a slave.
But I am a bit disappointed with David, I have to say. Even though we kind of saw it coming, when it did happen, I was tutting and shaking my head at him, because, you know, married man David.
I know.
I always, you know, it's with the characters that I really like, whenever they act in a way that I think, no, that's not on. That's just not cricket. I hold some certain characters to a higher standard than others. And like, when other people jump into bed with each other here, there and everywhere, even if they're, you know, married, sometimes I think, oh, for heaven's sake. But with David, it's like, oh, come on, David, please. No, I like David. He wouldn't do this, would he?
But do you think it's out of character?
I mean, he did. I'm trying to remember the situation. Trying to remember the situation when he ended up sleeping with Emma before.
I think this is very in character for David. I think he's very impulsive. As things don't go his way, and he acts out, doesn't he? He's done this before. He's gone on a rampage. He's smashed the street up. He's pushed his mum down the stairs. He has, in the past, had very negative reactions to things. He just can't really cope very well with adversity, which is a shame.
Yeah, I mean, considering that not only does he live on Coronation Street, he's also a member of the Platt family, which adversity comes thick and fast every week.
I think I can totally see David doing this. It is a shame, because we had been led to believe that he and Shona were sort of made for each other, even though I never particularly enjoyed.
I see, I did. I like Shona and David more. And also there's the kids to remember as well. I wonder how much he was thinking of, not that he's got kids with Shona, of course, but that he knows that both Max and Lily have got a fondness for Shona.
Well, I mean, when did they start dating? Like, Lily was a babe, wasn't she? Like, very young.
Yeah.
How long have they been going out?
I don't know. It must be like 2-3 years now, maybe. I'm trying to remember. Not that long, but I mean,
long enough for a small child to sort of go, this is now my mum.
Yeah, and I know that Max has had his issues with Shona, but I think he got over them. Max went to the hospital and she called him Clayton.
Didn't like that, did he?
But I think David should have been a bit more responsible. But he is in a very difficult situation. Not saying that I'd do that if I was in the situation with the next sexy Romanian that happened to walk down the street. But
yeah, I would hope not.
What did you think of his explanation to Nick about, oh, I just wanted to feel something?
Yeah, that's what I just said. That's how he does. That's what he's like.
Mm. I suppose it is quite similar to the Emma situation.
Think about it. He's basically been putting his life on hold for Shona, desperately waiting for her to remember him. Because I think he thought up till this point that it would be a matter of time and then they'd be back together.
Hmm.
And she would definitely remember them because their love is strong enough that the memories would come back. But now he's been told, none of what happened between us is important enough for me to remember that you even exist.
Hmm.
And so he's just gone, all of this emotion, all of this upset, all of this tension I've been holding, I'm going to let it go all at once.
Hmm.
And have a bit of a fight and another F word.
I suppose he's the sort of person that so many bad things have happened to him in his life. He thinks, well, this is another chapter of my life closed. Let's move on rather than fighting for it because I don't think it's going to work. I don't know. It's a shame. And I do prefer David when he's in a better place. I feel like he's been through a little bit too much tragedy over the last few years. And he's very good, Jack P. Shepherd, at doing the tragedy. But I do prefer him when he's, you know, a bit cockier and a bit happier. And
I like sardonic David, but I think there's room for sardonic David when bad things are bad things are happening.
Do you see any more future with him and Alina, or is that
very boring?
I would certainly. I can't see that they're a match together. But I don't think they're supposed to be. It's just literally the next bit bird to come along. Yeah, it is. It's just the drama and the drama that it causes for the Seb and Emma situation as well.
Said before that we really like Alina and we really can't decide out of Alina and Emma who we'd rather Seb was dating. But when I think of David and Alina together, honestly, it just makes me run cold because I think in a relationship with David, Alina would disappear and become very boring.
Yeah, no, I agree. I still can't decide who I want Seb to end up with.
I think he's going to end up with Alina now.
It feels like Seb and Alina are destined for each other. And they did work so well together last year. Seb and Alina were a great couple. And Emma, I guess, maybe has just been thrown into the mix to add that bit of spice to it. But she's obviously not happy with how things are going with Seb. But she's another one that, like I said before, I'm getting a little bit fed up of how much tragedy she's going through. Would Emma be better off as a single person?
I think so. I prefer Emma sort of as a lone operator.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because she's proven time and time again, she doesn't need a boyfriend, but also whenever she's in a relationship, she's just very insecure and she's just worrying about when it's going to end and that getting a bit stale fast. Mm-hmm. And I prefer her when she's happy and carefree.
Yeah,
and in a relationship, she just isn't.
Or I'd quite like it when she's trying to find a boyfriend and talking about dating, or she could have some very funny encounters with people.
Yeah.
And even, we don't need to see them even. We could just have her recount what her date was last weekend and it would be funny. But
either that or there needs to be somebody who is an obvious great match for her, which I'm sure there could be.
I'm sure there is, but nobody on the street currently jumps out to me as that person.
They could certainly create a character. And I hope they do because I'm getting a bit fed up of her. And I know it's not been... I mean, it was the same with her and Chesney, wasn't it, when she was together with him. And she basically brought that to an end because she felt so insecure in it. And yeah, let's either keep her single or create a character who is just perfect for her. Because I think that in a relationship with the right guy, it could work really, really well. But don't try and force her onto people just for the drama anymore. Please, Coronation Street. What else for this story? You think that the cover-up of Shona's absence is working out well because she's been talked about but not shown, obviously?
This is like one of the most interesting and well-done maternity leave stories they've ever had on Coronation Street, at least in recent years that I remember.
Yeah, I agree. It does.
They've really woven the character into the story.
Yeah, it's much better than sending them off to your sick mother, isn't it?
Yes, because when they get sent off to their sick mother, do we ever hear anything about what's going on? Is there ever any story? Would it really be so difficult for us to imagine that something interesting might be happening off screen?
Mm.
Like, couldn't we have you know, oh, you know, just it'd be really cool if they like did this more often and not just leave the.
I'm certainly not feeling like, oh, you're just avoiding showing her at the moment. If I didn't know that she was on maternity, I don't think I would necessarily be going, why aren't they showing her? That's weird.
Yeah,
I agree. She doesn't need to be in it. Yes, no. We had the scene with Nick going over there to Leeds the other day, and she wasn't in it, but it felt like she didn't need to be. So I'm pretty impressed with how Coronation Street is going on.
Great job, everybody.
How do you think it's going to end? Do you think that they are going to divorce, or do you think that they should divorce, or will it just be that once Jules is, you know, back up and running again, she'll miraculously have her memory back, and then they'll be back together.
Well, I wonder. There's got to be more to this Clayton thing. They didn't just
drop him in for one episode. Drop him in
so that David would get mad and sleep with Alina.
Mm.
So, when's Clayton due out? This is the question.
It's got to be ages.
Yeah.
I mean, he's murdered somebody. And how long ago was that? 4 or 5 years ago, maybe? He's been in there for a long time. So unless he does another escape again, which they've already done. It feels a little bit like they're trying to make him a Terry Duckworth sort of character, like the bad penny that just keeps showing up. But every time that he does come into it, I think, I don't need to see you anymore. You're just a millstone around this character's neck. But you're right, I don't think that they would have brought him in just the catalyst for David and Alina getting together. I'd like to think in a perfect world that David and Shona, you know, do just make up, but it feels like there's probably more, you know, to be, you know, got out of it if they do go down the whole route of the divorce.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, but I don't want it to be. I think
they've got to get back together, because I can just imagine, like, we get a few more scenes with David and Clayton moaning at each other, and then nothing happens, and then, you know, when Shona comes back to the show, we just get her turning up on the doorstep.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's really interesting.
I'd like it to be a happy ending, but she's saying now that she wants to stay living in Leeds, and clearly that's not going to happen.
Clearly, we can't allow her to stay in Leeds.
She's got to come back, but I think it'll be a little while longer before they're properly back together, I suppose. Do you think that? To what extent do you think that Clayton does actually want to rebuild these broken bridges with his mum?
I think he's
Or is he just doing it to mess with David?
I think he's just doing it for revenge.
Mm.
And because he's bored. He must be really bored in prison.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, anything for a bit of fun. And we know he's a bad person.
Mm.
I think he also is keenly aware that his mum is always in a position to offer him money, support, whatever he needs, and she would give it to him. So he's probably looking to the future and thinking, if she never remembers what happened, I might be able to get her to, you know, keep sending me money, or I might be able to stay with her when I come out of prison.
Yeah.
What's in it for me? And there's plenty of upsides.
I wonder how much it's going to, go back in his face, because the doctor in Leeds said, oh, she's it's helping her to remember more, so he could inadvertently trigger her remembering everything that happened. I mean, if she remembers what happened last year when he took her hostage, then it's game over for Clayton, really. But maybe he doesn't really care, and he's just messing with her for now. And
I think he's just,
like you said, some kind of revenge on David.
He's just an opportunist, isn't he?
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the next story then, Gemma. The Winter Blues, over to you.
So, on Monday, it was like we predicted. Well, we joked. We had very, very... I'm surprised we didn't get any complaints. We were making very bad taste jokes about putting babies in the ovens last episode.
I know, we were actually very, very close with what happened.
But she had a dream that she put him in the washing machine. And this is one of the very few times on Coronation Street that we will ever get a character and see what they dreamed about.
We had Andy having his feeling dream, didn't we?
Yeah, Pat. But other than that, so this was quite fun. I don't want them to overdo this.
Nope. I was watching it going, no.
It's like,
it wasn't obviously a dream as it was happening either, was it?
No,
it was very kind of blurry and wishy-washy. And I was thinking, is this a Matt Hilton episode? But it wasn't.
No, it was just a dream. Did you used to read Goosebumps and stuff, didn't you, when you were a kid?
Only a little bit.
Books, I remember books like that used to have sequences with crazy stuff happening, and then the end of the chapter would be a little, but then they woke up and you're like, oh.
Anyway, so she's having a dream that she's put Aled in the washing machine.
She wakes up, she sees the cot's empty, and she thinks, good God, has this happened? Did I really do this in my sleep? She rushes downstairs and she finds that Chesney is nursing him. And he was like, again, he all the time, he's always digging, like, oh, you, like, he can't just help. It's like, also, I resent the fact that it gets described as helping with the baby. Who are you helping, Chesney? It's your baby. Oh, I hate it. Julie, the health visitor, comes over. Gemma's trying to do the nappies. And she's like, go away, come back later, I'm busy, I can't open the door. And then the health visitor comes in and she's like, uh-oh. And is clearly worried that she's making herself look bad because, God forbid, well, a woman should need to change her baby's nappy.
Yeah, Gemma just wants to keep up the appearance that she's coping with everybody.
Yeah, and she's also just assuming everything she does is wrong.
Mm.
And every time she's doing something she shouldn't be doing it, oh, it's awful. Now, the health visitor says that Cleo has lost a bit of weight, but don't worry about it. You should use more formula. And then she starts saying, oh, have you had any dreams where you put Aled in the washing machine?
You have any scenes where, like, the camera's gone weird and there's been sound effects going on? Has that happened to you?
And she's like, no. No. Have you been reading the TV Times? Gemma says no. So... is this Julie, the health visitor, says...
Yeah, Julie says, right, go and sing nursery rhymes.
Sometimes you need to just step out. So when the babies are crying, she goes outside and starts to sing nursery rhymes, and then she locks herself out because life is just... anything that could go wrong does go wrong for Gemma right now. So she's desperately trying to get back in.
Banging on the door.
And she doesn't go... What?
No, I was just going to say, and she has... The drama is extended for a little bit because you think that Bernie's on the way over and that she can help, but she encounters Chesney with some quad balloons and they get talking for a little bit.
Well, she's really sweet because Bernie buys Gemma a Mother's Day gift from the quads.
Mm.
I don't know whether Chesney did. I've seen that he did.
Here you go, they brought you a kebab with all the trimmings.
Lovely. I'd quite like that right now.
Gemma would like that.
Wow. Anyone? You not want one?
Yeah.
If somebody gave you one right now, would you eat it? So Gemma doesn't go to Chesney to ask him for the key because if there's anything worse than being a bad mum in her mind, it's people finding out that she's a bad mum because she already thinks she's terrible, but she doesn't want Chesney to find out because, as we've worked out already, he's incredibly unsupportive and doesn't seem to understand how much stress she's under.
Well, he's got his hard day's work at the Prima Donna.
Oh, hard work.
Full-time job.
It's a full-time, yeah. Bernie goes to the front door, can't get an answer, but she can hear the babies crying. So she goes around the back and finds Gemma frantic. So, again, why didn't she just go and get the key? It's stupid to me. Like, I would... Anyway.
Old habits die hard.
She breaks in. She's like, I know how to solve this problem and smash a window. And if you can't... So, I always say, if you're in a fix... Smash a window, and if it doesn't work, you've let off a bit of tension. They go in. Gemma comes.
Bernie's like, oh, the babies are fine, don't worry. And Gemma's just losing it.
Gemma goes to check on them, but she stops herself because she's scared. She doesn't want to look in the cot. She thinks they've died.
Mm.
So Bernie has to rush over and pick them up. And she says, they're fine. And she can see, Bernie can see that Gemma, this is not a normal reaction, like, to freeze because you're scared that your babies have died in 5 minutes.
Mm.
Anyway, she says, please speak to Chesney about this. You need help. And Gemma doesn't want to speak to him because she's worried that he will find out she's a bad mum. And I don't know what she thinks is going to happen then. But it will be bad. And Bernie offers to move in to help out. And I think that she takes her up on that offer. And Gemma says, you better not tell Chesney. And I think they make a deal that she promises to not tell Chesney what happened as long as Gemma goes to the doctor.
Mm.
So then Chesney comes home to find out that Bernie's moving in. And she makes up a story about, oh, yeah, I had a row with my flatmate. Sorry, I broke your window doing kung fu. And Chesney's like, you can't really blame him for thinking this is not really what I want at the moment. The end of the episode, Gemma's wide awake in the middle of the night. She can't sleep. She's scared the babies, something's going to happen to them if she's not watching. So on Wednesday, Benny's making herself useful. Gemma's got this appointment at the doctor, but she won't tell Chesney about it. So they go to see Dr. Gareth, Benny and Gemma together. And Gemma's like, yeah, everything's fine. And Bernie's like, no, it's not fine. She can't cope and she's having bad thoughts. And Gemma's like, no, I'm just tired. And Dr. Gareth says, well, I'm going to put you on antidepressants and we're going to have the health visitor coming around a bit more often. We also get a scene as well when she was talking about she couldn't, like, Cleo losing weight and talking about formula and she felt like she was a bad mum because she had to supplement with formula and and stuff. And there's so much guilt tied up with breastfeeding and formula feeding and whether you're doing a good job or not. There's so many messages that women get told, like, oh, breast is best, you've got to, you know. But not everybody... There are really good benefits for breastfeeding, but mums who can't, those messages just make them feel worse. It doesn't help. So they've organised this help for Gemma. I don't know if it's really going to be that useful, to be honest. Bernie's annoyed when they go outside because she thinks Gemma's got postnatal depression and she was playing it down. And Chesney finds them arguing on the street, but Bernie won't tell him what's going on because of the promise. So Gemma, at the end of the episode, says, I will go back to the doctor if you think I'm not coping. Mm-hmm. But she obviously now is just going to try and hide it from Bernie as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well,
that makes sense.
Well, now it's just even more pressure because Bernie's going to be home all the time and Chesney's out. So it's when she couldn't cope, she didn't have to put on an act for anybody, but she might feel now like, I can't even tell my mum because she'll make me go to the doctor and she's probably thinking, oh, they'll take the babies away from me, or I don't know what she's thinking.
Yeah, I wonder
that.
She's
not being rational, clearly, but that's all part of the problem.
Yeah, speaking of the babies being taken away, we had a message from somebody called Goodnight Teddy Bear on Instagram this week who suggested that Gemma will end up wanting to put the kids up for adoption. So she will, you know, try and... Because, I mean, that I guess that a symptom of postnatal depression might be wanting to... is like, I want to get rid of these kids, I can't cope with them, or thinking that they'd be better off somewhere else. So
yeah,
I don't think that they will be adopted because that's kind of Coronation Street saying if you have problems with your kids, just put them onto somebody else and they'll go away.
I think that it would be very helpful for the future of the show if they were to get rid of the
children. It would be. Maybe just put a couple of them up for adoption, Gemma. Maybe just, you know, two or three.
I like the way this storyline is, like, it started off and everyone was saying, oh, we don't want this storyline. We don't want Gemma to have quads. She's not fun when she's stressed out. And then Coronation Street went, aha, but what if she had postnatal depression and psychosis? And we went, no, that's not it.
I'm still not particularly finding this that enjoyable. I said on the podcast last week, I think, that they're using postnatal depression a little bit too much as a Coronation Street story. It's not, like, relatable.
It's like...
For the four children bit of it, at least.
That's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. Like, really, of anybody in the entire country to have postnatal depression, she's, like, candidate number one. It's certainly not going to make any woman who's feeling... I don't know, maybe it does help, but I can't help but think that if I had postnatal depression, I was watching Gemma, and she had four kids to deal with, and a really useless husband... boyfriend, I think, well, what am I complaining about?
Yeah, it would
make me
feel
one. A bit worse, you know, like, I can't cope with one.
The one thing that's coming out of this that is good, I think, is that Bernie is coming across as a better mother.
Yeah.
She's not, you know, she's not got a latest scheme to try and...
She's not like, I know what we'll do, we'll sell one down the market and then use the funds to buy an au pair.
Yeah, I'm enjoying her more, but I could still do without this story.
It's just nice to see Gemma getting support of somebody, to be honest.
Yeah, and it was nice to see Dr. Gaddas, of course, this week as well. I'm surprised that Gaddas didn't pick up on the signs more. How much, if you're a doctor, are you allowed to say, are you sure? Like, if Gemma was saying, oh, I'm just tired, Gaddas was like, okay. You'd have thought she'd have noticed more, but maybe she's making little notes about it.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because... That's you can't just call people liars all the time. You can't force help on people that don't want it. But you could tell that Bernie was there going, yes, she needs help, 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 please.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, you know, they're short on staff at the moment at the medical centre now with Ali and Toya gone.
She's all by herself. Moira's not even there.
Speaking of people not noticing as well, there's also Chesney. It's like, has he really not noticed that Gemma's not coping as well?
He's being such a selfish little dick, isn't he? It's really irritating.
They're not really showing that much of him. It's definitely a Gemma and Bernie storyline, what we've seen so far.
I think I would prefer it if Chesney had, like, a reason to not be paying attention.
Yeah, but it's then not like again, there's mega drama going on at the kebab shop, is it?
But then again, I'm sure women have had this situation where their partner is just not noticed. And yeah. I guess that's good. It's good to sort of show. Because it's really not through any... I mean, it's not through that much... No, I don't know to whether to blame Chesney or not. Because really, they should be communicating better. But you can't really... If you've got postnatal depression, you're not going to be thinking like that. He should be taking care of the children when he's at home. He doesn't seem to be doing that.
Yeah, she's just got into her head that she needs to be a good mum. And after all her chaffy ways in London, this time last year was when she was showing that she was completely irresponsible. She's just wants to prove that she can do it, but she really should say to Ches what's going on. Right, let's move on. Are you done with that story?
Yeah.
Any other comments?
It's just a bit depressing.
I don't need that storyline particularly, but what I do need is plenty more carrying on at Still Waters, which I'm still very much enjoying, and it's kind of getting sillier and sillier, but I've kind of categorised this in my brain as the comic relief story. And yeah. I'm running with it, so that's fine. Everybody on Monday is having a wonderful time over there, apart from Norris.
I like the way that Norris's reaction to people having fun when he's not is to go, you must be in a cult.
I know.
It's like, you're not exactly the most fun-loving of people at the best of times, Norris. Why do you think that it's a cult just because you don't like it?
They've got their art class on Monday morning, which Charles has to run because the person who was going to be doing it is off sick or something like that. Norris thinks it's a load of rubbish, but when Frieda comes, he's pretending to enjoy it because he still hasn't... He's not following Ken's advice to open up to her and tell her that this is a bit weird here. Ken's like saying, no, you've got to let Frieda or anybody know that you're not enjoying it here. Don't keep it bottled up. So he shows up at the Rovers where he gets into a booth with Mary and Rita. I think originally he didn't want them to know that he was in an old folks home because he didn't want them to know that he's... It's all. I suppose to some people it might feel like he's given up.
Rovers,
yeah. Yeah. So, but he ends up telling them, and they tease him a little bit, just for fun.
Well, it must be a bit weird to sort of go, "Hello, yeah, I'm in an old people's home," to your friends one of your friends who's probably the same age as you, if not older, who still has a full time job.
Yeah, that's true. Then this is when Ken hears that Eccles is in danger of being left alone at home at number one tonight. So he's not too happy with that situation.
Well, yeah, because Tracy's not that bothered.
No, so Tracy says, look, it's Stillwater's fault for not accepting pets at all. So
it's a bit weird. I guess Eccles has never really been left alone.
I don't know, I guess. I don't know, maybe. There's always...
We'll probably pop down the pub.
I suppose there's always a house full there. But maybe not overnight. I suppose it's a bit like...
So she's being left alone overnight.
Yeah, I suppose it's a little bit like with my dad and his cat as well, isn't it? Because he's often not wanted to come down and see us because he doesn't want the cat left alone. But he's got over that now.
Yeah.
So Ken's solution to this is to smuggle Eccles into Stillwaters. Why are we calling it Stillwaters this week? We need to come up with some more funny names for this.
We decided to call it Bum Marsh.
Oh, yeah, the Bum Marsh. Yeah, that's our one.
That's
name
a bit of a throwback,
week.
If you remember where that came from.
He promises Claudia, look, it's only going to be for one night. And there's a funny little scene. It reminded me of saying, like, out of Mr. Bean or something, when he was like, smuggling the dog there. And then Eccles goes down on the floor as Charles is walking past and Ken's pretending to admire this plant that's out there. It's all a bit slapstick. But
it reminds me of Metal Gear Solid.
Why?
Well, like, you hide under a under
the box.
and the patrol person's like, yep, this box was
everything
here.
Fine, everything's okay. On Wednesday, Norris is in there with Ken and Eccles worrying that he's going to be caught. And also we find out he's still not spoken to Frieda about his feelings about...
stagnant ponds.
Yep. But when... Ken tried to bring up and say, no, you really need to talk to Frieda about it, and Norris can't get out there quick enough. Meanwhile, Charles is fine.
Being a creepy weirdo.
Yeah, he is a little bit. He does his Inspector Clouseau act.
He's walking along and he sees a puddle on the floor. And his first reaction is to dab his...
He very gingerly kind of dabs his handkerchief in it. And
I don't think that gingerly is the right word. I think it was like...
I suppose not,
like
no.
An aficionado... Oh, I've said it wrong. Like, he's done it before, and he is relishing the prospect of catching someone out.
He dips his hanky in just the corner and gives a good old sniff.
A canine urine sommelier on Twitter.
Ooh, I'm getting hints of bonios.
And bits of chewed up grass.
And leftover Betty's hot pot. So Ken...
shouldn't feed dogs onions.
Ken later receives a letter from Charles.
Then he hears Eccles
He
could have just listened at the door and heard a dog barking. He didn't need to be sniffing dog wee off the floor. But whatever gets you off, Charles.
So Ken gets a letter from Charles later and he goes and confronts him about it because it also contains a fine, which Charles says is all to do with the cleaning and everything and for breaking the rules. And Ken thinks this He thinks that this is ridiculous, but Charles isn't backing down. So now Ken is on the anti-Charles side, because all this week and last week as well, he thought Charles has been wonderful. Remember last week he was trying to claim that he'd been travelling all around the world and he was being a SWAT in the art class on Monday, which is quite funny, putting his hand up.
Yeah.
He's as an ex-teacher, he knows what a good student how to behave, and he knows what he'd like.
Well, Ken probably just walked into... Shady Bush and went, my time to shine, you know? Like, well, he did. We saw him. Mm. He is in his element. Finally, people appreciate all the crap knowledge that he's accumulated over his life about modern art and things. He's now nobody to talk to about it apart from Claudia, who's like, darling, I know all about this.
Deirdre was an expert on modern art. Did you not see her pottery?
I don't think it was supposed to look quite so abstract as it did.
I don't know, you put one of Deirdre's pots next to a Jackson Pollock, you could wonder which one is...
I know, but what I'm talking about is the difference in intention.
Okay, that's true.
I think that she was trying to make normal looking things, but they just came out slightly different from the way she envisioned.
that's what's going on there. Do you think that was the whole Eccles thing just to get Ken onto Norris's side? So are they both going to be trying to take down Charles together now? Because he definitely seemed to have had his nose put out of joint by this.
Oh, the plot was just to try to... Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I still don't know exactly what's going on with Charles and how...
I don't get what the problem with him is. It's like he's just a guy who runs an old folks home with strict rules. What's really wrong with that? I'd have rules as well.
Because we're hearing from Norris, and I think you've got to take everything that Norris says about him with a grain of salt.
That's what I'm thinking. What is his crimes? He made a rule, Ken broke it, and there were consequences. Oh no, what a wrong-in.
I'm kind of imagining that Charles is some mega crime boss or something.
I know, but there's been nothing...
This
is why it's annoying, because if it turns out that is the case, Norris was only right by coincidence, not because he had any inside knowledge or was astute or observant in any way that anyone else couldn't have done.
Norris has picked up lots of skills over his time spending sweeping the street outside the cavern. He's good at observing people.
I think he just was good at thinking the worst of people, which I don't think is a very good...
That's true, actually. Do you think that Charles is going to be up to something? It feels like the story is going to be they are going to uncover that he's got, some secret granny pants racket or something going on. I don't know.
But my point is, it would be more satisfying if there was an actual reason that Norris, like something that Norris had picked up on that nobody else had, rather than I just don't like this guy because he made a rule and made me follow it that I presumably had agreed to when I signed up. Because I hate it when things like this happen. If you agree to a rule and then you don't follow the rule, don't bitch about the consequences.
Well, I know. I was kind of thinking that I was almost on Charles's side at the end of Wednesday's episode. You can't just smuggle a pet inside somewhere.
I can understand you want your pet. And I
that's what really you sign up for when you go to an old folks home.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that was that story. Coronation Street revisits its fascination with wee and toilet humour after the...
And dogs doing poos and wee.
Yeah, at least it wasn't a big pile of poo that, that Eccles had left.
At least.
Although I was surprised that it hadn't dried up. I don't know what the evaporation time is for dog urine.
They've got damp in there, if that's still hanging about. And also, you know how, like, when you always say... Oh, the person who wrote the script hasn't been to a school for 20 years when they write about teaching and stuff, and like you were talking about how like Hope's art is not very good for a girl of her age, etc.
No, it is not.
I'm gonna say whoever wrote the script doesn't have a dog, because dogs don't just spontaneously wee on the floor when they've been on lying down for like 5 seconds.
Well, we did say that last week that Eccles was getting on a bit.
I don't
think... We all lose a bit of bladder control when we reach our twilight years, and I guess that's the same for dogs as well. Just saying. I just think that Ken wasn't a very responsible dog owner for not noticing when it happened. He was too busy investigating the plant. I picked my dog
up and it was lying in a pile of wee. Maybe he needs to...
Never mind. Like I said, because this is kind of categorised in the comic relief story...
There's no point
applying logic to it. I just enjoy it for the silly situations that the characters are getting.
We like a bit of silliness, so let's stop moaning about it.
Yes. Now, what I'm also enjoying this week, even though there wasn't particularly any developments this week, was the Evelyn storyline.
Of course, because we love Evelyn and she is great.
Yes.
So on Monday, she... was stood up last week by Arthur. She reserved a booth and everything, even though that's not actually physically possible. She still managed to make them do it. But she's pretending she's not bothered by the fact that she got stood up.
And she's a bit like David this week, isn't she? Not wanting to open up about her true feelings and just saying, it's fine, whatever.
Whatever, I don't even care.
But Tyrone's angry on her behalf.
Yes.
He says that he's gonna give Arthur a piece of his mind if he ever does show up.
Yes. Sorry, I'm really distracted because I remember I put some beef in the freezer and I can't remember what I was going to do with it.
Carry on with the podcast.
Really, really bothering me.
Maybe it'll come to you.
Because I know I bought it for a reason and I don't know what it is.
Well, I don't know.
What did I buy beef for?
No, nice diced, roast.
No, diced beef. Because I keep thinking, I could use that for this instead of doing that. And now I can't remember what the this was. I mean, than that. I know what the this is, but what's the that? Sorry, it's really bothering me.
Well,
okay.
If it comes to you, then I'm sure our listeners are on the edge of their seats waiting to know.
It's really annoying. Why? Anyway, what happened? So Tyrone sees Arthur again, and he does give him a piece of his mind, just as we were promised. Arthur's trying to explain himself, but Tyrone doesn't want to hear it. He says, Evelyn doesn't want to see you anymore, and sort of sends him off with a flea in his ear. But when he sees Evelyn and Fizz in the shop, he doesn't mention that he'd seen Arthur and told him that. But Arthur later catches Evelyn in the shop and says, I'm sorry, I was insecure because of how old I've become. Which is a bit of a weird thing to say, because she already saw you the first time, and she knows how old you are.
Yeah, but, you know, I think some people think that they're past the dating age. Especially after she looked so young and glamorous, thanks to Claudia's makeover last Friday.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it, about men, is that they can't really slather anything on the cracks.
Exactly.
Evelyn seems to accept this, and he mentions that Tyrone had a go at him. So back at home, Evelyn's like, keep your nose out. To Tyrone, she doesn't want him to interfere, but she does say it was nice of him to care, which is sweet. So on Wednesday, she's still acting laissez-faire about it when Fizz is asking her, are you seeing Arthur late? She's like, yeah, maybe, I don't mind. She then invites Claudia around to do her makeup again, because she still wants to look glam. And it was really great. I really love this scene, because we know that in real life, these actresses share a dressing room.
Mm. They share a flat together as well, don't they?
Yes. Maureen Lipman wrote about it, so we know. And it was kind of almost like in real life, she was getting a makeover.
Yes.
She
did just look.
But I think actually not even a makeover. Right? It was like Maureen Lipman turned up instead of Evelyn.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. When she swanned into the room wearing some of Claudia's clothes, that looked like Maureen Lipman showing up at an award ceremony or something like that. She looked great.
She looked beautiful. And I love the style too. It's a bit Yasmini too. Yasmin doesn't wear scarves over her shoulder anymore, but she used to.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, do you reckon that's Jess influence? Because she definitely used to have a bit more of an eccentric boho kind of style,
Jeff has tried to influence what she wears, hasn't he?
It kind of feels a bit like he's kind of made her style more westernized, you know? Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't like it. But yeah, so Evelyn had like a scarf over her shoulder, like she's wearing a chiffon-y top and drapey everything, like a really rich art teacher.
She's still nervous about it, isn't she? And she's worried what people are going to say and everything.
So Claudia says, does he make you happy? And who gives a hoot what I or anyone else thinks? Which is great. And I think Claudia, to me, seems like the kind of woman who's always got a man on the go, you know?
Mm.
And I think she's got lots of good advice that Evelyn should be taking here about how to catch a guy.
Yeah.
So Evelyn and Arthur meet in the pub later. They have a very nice afternoon together. And he walks her home. And before she goes inside, this is so sweet, he gives her a ticket from the last dance that they went to together. Oh, and she goes inside and then she leans up this against the door. This is like from
back in the, you know, the 60s or 70s,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. She goes inside and she leans up against the door and she has this loved up look. She looks like a Disney heroine who just came home from a date with a prince.
I loved that.
And she's like,
"Ah, this is just perfect for me."
But what's going to...
Humanising Evelyn.
Is something bad going to happen?
I don't know.
Please don't.
I mean, they've got this Paul Copley actor playing Arthur, who's kind of a big name, and he's been in lots of things.
And I have discovered. To publicly apologise for spoiling Downton Abbey. I really didn't realise that people were still getting through it. It's really bad, I'm sorry. I apologise.
But he feels to me like he's not going to stay in, but I really, really want him to. What we've seen between them this week is exactly what I mean when I say there needs to be more romance between characters, but when they're trying to get together, because I can feel more of a connection, more chemistry, more of a click between Arthur and Evelyn than I can at all between, you know, Sarah and Adam, or, I mean, David and Alina, obviously, as well, there's never supposed to be. But it doesn't take much. And yes, they're two fantastic actors and they've been, you know, both very celebrated and awarded and everything. But do you see what I mean? I buy them as a couple now. If they were to put them together, I'd be totally invested in them. They'd be there for, you know, nominated for a couple of the year, and I want them to get married. And
what, Arthur and Evelyn?
Yeah, I think they're wonderful together. Just from just a few, you know, taking it slowly at the beginning and a few looks.
I don't know what they've got in common, to be honest.
I like the whole, they used to go out together kind of angle.
But it feels like too much time has passed. And I think it'd be more realistic if they said, we missed our chance. And it'd be sad and tragic, but Maureen Lipman would perform it really well.
But Evelyn is kind of saying that a little bit, not to him, but to Tyrone and Fizz, who were kind of goading her about it. But she obviously thinks that she's not past it. And the fact that...
No, I'm not saying she's past it.
When Claudia's doing her up to look all gorgeous, she's kind of realising that there's still life in the old girl yet.
Of course, I'm not trying to say that at all. I don't know why you're saying that's what I said. I'm saying that they might find that all the things that they had in common when they were young have changed, like people change throughout the years, and when you're in a couple, you either change together or you grow apart. But they've been apart for so long that they might not have the things that they once held in common, that might not still be the case. And there is, you know, a certain melancholy kind of bittersweet thing to acknowledge that they could have made it, but they didn't when they had the chance.
How do you think that Evelyn would react to a breakup? Well, because it seems to me that the way that she acted after he didn't show up on Friday was, you know, just drawing more into her shell, and I think it would really knock her for six now she's kind of invested in it.
Yeah, but I think if they sort of just let it go, I think that might be a bit easier to cope with. I'm just the reason I'm not for it, this relationship, is because where does he live?
I don't know.
Relationships between older people on the street normally work when the characters all both live on the street already and they can just date each other or something.
Yeah, like that. But really, if you think about it, he's not going to move in with Tyrone and Fizz, is he?
That's my point. And how often, and they're not going to get a place together, I don't think. How often have older couples really ever in the street got together recently?
No, I know. It's
Claudia,
kind of
Claudia, Ken and Audrey, the only... Lewis and Audrey, but they're a bit, you know, Evelyn's older, isn't she? That's what I'm just stuck up against this idea of how will they write this into the story, because he can't just be on the street for no reason.
Like
he has to be on a date with her for him to be in the show.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's making me think a little bit more of the Ted Sullivan storyline from 90s Corrie, who was the nice guy that came into Rita's life, and then he had a terrible brain tumour and he died, and it was kind of ended that way. So they could be going that route as well. They could have them, you know, embark on some kind of glorious love affair, and then it turns out that he's dying or something.
No, I prefer the way I said it.
Oh, it could be that as well.
I think it's sad, but you like it's a truth, isn't it?
Mm.
That sometimes you can meet an old lover and rekindle your romance after your first marriage or whatever is finished, but just as equally likely is that you have changed as a person.
Mm, and it's the kind other of person like a, hasn't changed. In another life situation.
That's what maybe. I think. I think that would be, like I said, bittersweet and quite tragic and romantic.
Yeah.
And I think that they're both really good actors. We've seen him in Downton Abbey. He was great. We know that Maureen Lipman is fantastic. They could really make a sweet and affecting romance story, like a tragically doomed romance story between an older couple, which you don't very often see.
Mm.
Especially, it'd be nice if they did. One of them didn't bloody die, because that's probably a bit depressing when you're an old person and you want to, you know, see people like you on TV, and one of them dies. And you're like, oh, how original.
As long as he doesn't have some horrible dark secret and he's really a nasty guy.
Maybe he's a serial killer.
I'm just loving how much depth it's bringing to Evelyn. It's lovely, and the scenes that we're getting between Evelyn and Claudia are wonderful as well.
Oh, I
mean, the stuff, the ones this Strange week, it was pretty much the same as last week. To be fair, wasn't it? The makeover scene, but I didn't really care.
No,
I'd have a scene like that every episode if I could. They were wonderful, and I loved it at the very end after. The makeover had finished and Evelyn was like, Claudia, thank you. Whereas last week, she kind of sent her away with a flea in her ear, didn't she? Saying, yeah. Look at all this slap you've made me up to. But now she's, oh, it's just lovely, lovely stuff. Very heartwarming. That just leaves us with, we just got one story left to cover now. Yes, the Yaz lighting story. Okay, I don't think a whole lot happened here this week, but it started with Jeff telling Alia that he's sorting out a new rotor at speed dial so they can avoid each other. And then Alia gets a phone call, who we later find out is Zidane. No, we don't. The phone call is the police, isn't it? Because we don't know at the time who it is. But last week, she and Toya went to try and find out some information about Jeff, and the police have phoned
Claire's
her.
Law.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Ryan goes over to Yasmin's house to extract her and says, oh, Alia's been on the phone. She's in a right state. You need to come over. She says she'll only see you. So Yasmin kind of...
She
knows that if she is found to have left the house, she's going to get in trouble, but she answers the call.
Oh.
And she goes over to Alia's flat, where there's two police officers there, and they've both got information on Jeff. And Yasmin's, Alia, what have you done? She's got absolutely no interest in talking to the police and leaves. However, Alia goes back over to her garden later and says, look, just take their number just in case you need to speak to someone about it.
I'm sorry, I tricked you.
Yeah, but here you go. Here's somebody to talk to if you need to. And she then goes back and tells Ryan about what's happening and says, look, Yasmin's really, really scared. She's only listening to Jeff. And Ryan says, I can think of one other person that she might listen to, which is Zidane. And this is how Zidane comes into it, Alia's brother. Obviously, the actor doesn't appear, but he's on the end of the phone and he's telling Alia that, Yasmin, you know, she seems happy enough to me. He just doesn't seem to be particularly helpful, does he?
He's being a bit of a dick.
Yeah, I would have thought that he might listen to her more. But he's too loved up because he's got this new bird and he's off on holiday with her soon.
It's probably also quite difficult to judge the gravity of the situation considering that Alia seems to overreact and everything's a catastrophe.
I suppose so. He knows that she is a bit of a drama queen.
Yeah.
Anyone who's seen what she went through after Luke ended up dying her. So Wednesday we have Jeff secretly booking another, is date the right word, with this escort, Rachel? I don't know.
I think so.
But he's asking for repeat customer rates or something like that, which is grim. And then he's really ratty with Yasmin when she starts talking to him about a doctor's appointment that
she's
has
got
to
a bad
go
stomach.
To
she's,
and this, this is a couple of
times
this is a couple of times that the bad stomach has been mentioned now, and he kind of reluctantly agrees to go to the doctors with her, but we don't get to see any of that. And it feels like this is a little bit of a clue that's being dripped in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with her?
Well, I saw a theory online that people saying that maybe Jeff is poisoning her.
Gosh, that seems a bit drastic.
It does, but I mean,
I don't
if
think
he
that's
wants
what
to make him
do,
if he's what trying to make himself, more needed.
Well, that's Munchausen's by proxy.
Well, yeah, maybe it's. I don't know. You never
that's
can
not
tell
the same.
These...
I suppose it's a form of abuse, but I don't think it.
If you're poisoning your wife. That sounds like abuse to me.
No, I know, but it's a form of abuse, but it's not following the same pattern as coercive control and what Yasmin's been going through. Munchausen's by proxy is when you make someone else sick or you say they're sick to get attention for yourself. But Jeff's not followed that playbook, has he? He doesn't want he wants attention from Yasmin. He doesn't want attention from everyone else.
Well, maybe he's realising that Yasmin is starting to suspect him or something. And he's thinking that the only way that I can guarantee that she's at my beck and call is if she's, sick in bed.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I also wonder how much of the cooking he is doing as well, because I would have thought that in the setup that they've got there, where he's basically the man who goes out to work and she's the little wife back at home, that she'd be doing a lot of the food preparation.
Well, part of the controlling that he's doing is making her do all this housework and cooking and things.
Mm. I know there's a lot of cleaning. I'm just not sure about the housework particularly.
Well, the food is the way, I mean. Like, he makes her... Yeah, I think she does it all because he's given her budgets and... trying to, and when she annoys him, he uses the food to get back at her by refusing to eat it and throwing it around.
There's got to be something going on with that.
Oh,
but
yeah, definitely. I just wondered if it was, like I said, because I get a bad stomach when I have anxiety.
Yeah.
A few times I've had to go to the doctor because I get stomach aches. But because you're anxious already, you start to go, oh no, what if I, apart from everything else that's happening, what if I've got appendicitis or stomach cancer or something?
Yeah. Well, we don't get to find out any more about that as far as I remember, because the drama then turns to Alia contacting Zidane again.
I've got a stomach ache. I've got a bit of a trouble at the moment, by the way, and I'm worried about it. Where is your appendix?
It's about here. It's in lower right.
It's the other side.
Oh, no, you're right. I don't think that's
maybe
it.
I've got that mirror syndrome where my guts are the opposite way around.
We find out that Zidane is getting low-key married in Spain to this new girl that he's going out with, and Ryan comes up with a plan, which is to have Alia invite herself and Yasmin along to it. Zidane just wants, as I said, it to be low-key after all the drama that the family's been through, but Alia goes over to speed dial and says... Grand, Zidane wants us to go over to Spain to get married, and Jeff isn't invited. Sorry, Jeff, and you got to look after this place anyway. You got to look after speed dial.
Well, she keeps going, it's close family only. It's close family only.
Yeah. But, he pulls the rug out from under her later in the episode by saying, actually, I found out that speed dial is doing so well, I can just get some cover and I can go off to Spain with you and we can all go and celebrate Zidane's nuptials together.
Well, it is a stupid plan, really, from Alia, because... close family would include
the spouse.
Your spouse, yeah. And if you if you're not invited, that's just a snub.
Mm.
I
didn't think it was too bad a plan, and she is desperate at the moment. And...
Well, it wasn't a good plan because it was immediately, what's the word? Thingied by Jeff. He just went, no, I am coming. And suddenly Alia's plan is gone wrong.
I mean,
because him saying, no, I will come. Was enough for her to derail the whole thing.
I'm kind of assuming that they're not going to go.
No,
I don't think that there'd be any decent drama, because they're obviously not going to show any Spain stuff. They can't show them going.
So what's the point?
I mean, the point would be, let's take the story off our screens for another few weeks. And we have had quite a few weeks of this now. But I'd rather that there was something that came along that stopped them from going.
Oh, I think that Alia will just keep saying, you can't come, Zidane doesn't want you to go. And then Yasmin will say, well, I can't go if Jeff can't go. And then the whole plan grinds to a halt.
Mm. I mean, Zidane doesn't want them there anyway.
No, I know. Alia's just crazy.
I mean, it could well be that Yasmin now phones up Zidane. Is she just going to, you know, take everything that Alia... If I found out that my grandson was getting married, I would be phoning up saying, oh, yes, I'll sit down. I can't wait to come over and see you.
And then he's like, why are you coming?
No, you're not coming. So that could happen. But also on the subject of phone calls, I do wonder whether Jeff is going to find this number of the police. So I can't remember what Yasmin's done with it.
Did she put it in under Claire?
Oh, yeah, I think she did.
I hope she spelled it right, because it hasn't got an I in it.
So I wonder whether he's going to uncover what's been going on there and get mad. I don't know.
It was a very interesting theory that she's being poisoned.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm looking forward to more of this next week. I feel that not a whole lot happened this week, but we've had lots of developments in recent weeks for this story, so I don't particularly mind. And that's basically it for this week's Coronation Street, apart from there was a Todd mention, wasn't there, on Wednesday that I just want to bring up. It's been a long while since Eileen's mentioned Todd, but she was saying that, with Mother's Day being around, just having happened, I was expecting, every year I wonder, is he going to send me something, and he never does.
Weird, they mention him so much. They've never mentioned Jason.
It's been a long time since Todd's got a mention.
But my argument is still correct in that he's been mentioned far more than any other character that's left before. He keeps getting mentioned, and it winds me up because we know he can't come back.
No.
He's not ever going to come back as... Unless,
because it's been so long since they mentioned him, unless, and they're mentioning him now, I'm wondering whether this is going to be the time that they write him out, they kill him off, or something like that.
Or are they thinking of recasting?
No, I don't think so.
I really would. I don't think anyone would be as good.
No.
But I do miss that character.
I miss the character, but I think that Bruno Langley brought an awful lot to that role.
Oh, yeah, he was amazing.
So I just wonder whether Eileen's brought him up to kill him off. There seemed to be absolutely no reason.
But is he still hiding in the woods?
Exactly, it's ridiculous. It's one of these silly things that Coronation Street are better off just not mentioning and hoping that we'll forget about. Anyway, that's it for the end of Street Talk this week. I am going to give this week a... It was fine. I'm going to give it 3 quad balloons.
3?
Yeah. Why?
Evelyn. We had... You like... Oh, fine.
I just didn't think there was a whole lot of development. I don't think
what
that
a lot...
What are
you giving it out of?
Quad balloons.
Oh, 3.
I didn't think...
That's exactly the right number.
I didn't think that very much happened with the Evelyn story. It was kind of a bit predictable that he would be along and he'd have some excuse for why they didn't turn up and that's what happened. It was nice, the scenes that we got, but there was, not much development. The same with the David and Alina story. We kind of saw that coming and it was all a little bit icky. The Gemma story, I'm not particularly invested in. The Yasmin story, I didn't feel like there was a whole much... none of these stories took massive strides forward, I would say, this week, which is why... It was okay. It was good, but not great.
I thought it was all right. I'll give it 3.5 copiously urinated puddles because there was some fun stuff.
Delightfully
in this
fragrant.
Episode.
Okay.
Episodes.
Character of the week wise, it's kind of difficult. I mean, I can't give it to Evelyn every time she shows up. But Evelyn was awesome. So was Claudia again. But equally, I enjoyed the Stillwater stuff as well. But also. Credit where credit's due to Bernie. She's actually being a decent mum at the moment.
I'm going to give it to Claudia because just in general, I love her. And like you say, can't keep giving it to Evelyn. And I think that I've been really enjoying watching Claudia in the Stillwater stuff. And even though it wasn't this week, she definitely deserves a nod to how well she wears fencing equipment or outfits.
Yes.
So, and I liked her sage words of wisdom because I'm not giving it to David or anyone. I'm not giving it to anybody in the Gemma or the Shona storyline.
Mm. Well, let me give it to Arthur then for just being a thoroughly nice chap.
He's
feeling a little bit insecure about himself at the moment. So maybe by giving Arthur a reward, it'll help him to realise that he's actually very much loved.
Turn around to bite you in the bum.
I know, but
it turns out that he was committing atrocities in the Pennines.
For now, I'll do it given that. And well done to him for keeping hold of that dancing ticket for all these decades.
This is the thing, he obviously really treasured it. Isn't that adorable?
It is, but I mean, it's when he was married to this other woman in the intervening years.
Evelyn. Don't go in Granddad's shed. It's got all the trinkets from the women that he used to date before he married me, in case he stumbles across them again.
Right. There we go, then. So we got our scores on our characters.
Maybe he killed
his
wife.
Well, who knows? Who knows? Right.
I can't wait to find out.
Gemma.
Yeah.
Lack of news again this week, apart from anything that's, there's more developments in what we were talking about last week. But I think we have got quite a lot of feedback to get through, so I'm happy to move right along and do that.
Okay. Feedback time, and the average score on the Facebook group for last week's shenanigans was 3.725 out of 5. And Abby gave it 3.5 trousers in a wind tunnel. Robin gave it 3.5 books Ken's actually had published. And Andrew, who's Michael's winner, gave it 3.5 curried carpets.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Carpets are taking a bit of a beating in Coronation Street. Last week there was curry over the carpet. This week there was dog wee over the carpet.
I know. It's like somebody's got a vendetta or something.
It is. It's going to be Arthur when his axe murdering ways resurface and he murders somebody and there's going to be blood dripping into the carpet. That's my prediction. Thank you to everybody who sent us emails and tweets and messages and everything this week. They're always gratefully received. And
Includes
from Chris, who says, I'm still only just getting used to Moira on Corrie and Helen on Archers having the same voice. And now we're meeting an elderly, well-spoken gentleman introduced on the street as a bit of a love interest for Evelyn. But it's the same actor who plays the chap who's currently courting rural matriarch Jill Archer. Most confusing. Is the pool of UK acting talent so shallow that there aren't enough quality thesps to go around without some of them moonlighting on other soaps?
Ooh.
I suppose if we don't really watch a wide variety of TV, do we? So we don't notice these things quite so much. But
I think that I'm not going to say anything. I was just going to say some actors are a bit snobby, aren't they? They won't ever be on a soap.
Oh yeah,
so
definitely.
That probably narrows the pool a bit. Than
yeah, it's like I've been in this biz for the last 50 years. And I'm not lowering myself to a soap opera.
I don't know whether people would think that about Corrie though, because I think.
It is an institution.
Yeah, I think if I was in it, but I don't know. I mean, Brad Pitt's never been on it. He's the best actor I can think of.
Chris also says, I just paused the podcast as you're starting to talk about his Tyrone and his chin-stroking taunt at Evelyn. So this is his chinny last week, wasn't it? When I was at school in Liverpool, we'd do something similar, but we'd put our tongues between our bottom teeth and lip, stroke the chin, and for some reason say, Edna.
Edna. See, we used to, that putting your tongue between your teeth and your bottom lip was like, nah. If somebody did something stupid, you go, nah.
That turned into a bit of a discussion on our Facebook group as well, I think, didn't it? And people were saying various things that they used to have at school. But yeah, chinny was one of them. And apparently something people say it came from Jimmy Hill as well, who had a massive chin, the pundit.
Oh.
So I don't know.
You'd anyway, also go, Dinlow.
Only down here.
Dinlow, everybody?
No, that's down here only.
No. Do you remember when I mentioned
that? Oh, yes, I remember that.
You might want to.
Chris said he's made a few inquiries recently, and in Runcorn, they do the same action but say, Gogger. And
are you sure it's not pronounced Gogger, Michael?
Yes. In Helens, they'd say, Chin Beams.
Chin Beams.
In Widnes, it was Chinny. And in Southport, they do that action and say a very sarcastic, theatrical, Sure George.
Nice.
Ah, thank you to Chris for doing all that research. I assume you didn't do the research for us and it was part of another little project that you got. But that was really, really interesting. I love that just brought back so many memories last week when Tyrone did his itchy chin.
It's cool. Yeah, I love stuff like this. I also like comparing different people's experiences or things that they used to say in the playground according to where you lived in the country.
Yeah.
Because seems like this was a pretty universal thing.
Well, it seems like it was all around the country. And I hope we're educating our foreign listeners as well about what weird things go on in British playgrounds.
But do they do it in Canada and America and Australia as well? I don't know. And
I guess this not, because if it came from a Jimmy Hill...
I don't know. Is this also a certain generation? Because we don't know how old Chris is.
No.
So do your children in the playground do this?
No, they definitely don't. It's not a thing
have you
anymore.
Done it? Have you done it to them when they say, "Sorry, my dog ate my homework"? You go, "Chili."
No, but I will next time. Right, next email, Gemma. This is from Fiona.
Okay, right. Fiona has spoken to us about the Jeff and Yasmin storyline. She said that she enjoyed hearing our thoughts on Rachel's role in it, and says, "It's not uncommon for abusers to have affairs, but I think Jeff is going to use Rachel to confide all his problems with Yasmin, that she's mentally unstable, doesn't want him anymore, and even though he's done all these nice things for her, she doesn't appreciate him. That way, he can use her to prove what a great guy he is if anyone starts to question him. She'll repeat all the deceptions he's told her, and it will reinforce his good opinion of himself."
That's a nice idea. I mean, the only thing with that is that there's other people that he can talk to. He can speak with Tim about this. He's not, you know, got no friends. No,
yeah, but all those people are more Yasmin's friends than his, or they could ask Yasmin themselves and find out whether he's talking rubbish or not. Whereas Rachel is only being told one side of the story, and she's only interested in his side of the story because she's getting paid, so she's not going to double check this with anyone, and she's not going to hear something weird and go, "Yasmin, Jeff told me blah blah blah."
There's also Brian as well, isn't there, who seems to be believing everything that Jeff says at the moment.
I know, but
it could go that way.
All right, listen to, you know,
yeah, no,
who knows what she's talking about. She says, "At the same time, he will be trying to control her, which would be good if the writers then use that against Jeff. The best way to undermine an abuser is to believe the victim and take their side against the abuser. That way, the foundations of Jeff's power could start to crumble." "I love this story arc, as uncomfortable as it is to watch, and I love the way people have stopped asking why Yasmin doesn't just kick Jeff out and stand up for herself. That shows what a brilliant job the writers have done with this story by showing how the abuser undermines and traps the victim and strips their independence. Ian and Shelley are outstanding, and I really hope they are showered with every award going." I agree. "Absolutely love the podcast. Almost always agree with Gemma." Oh, thank you.
Almost always.
"Michael, your terrible puns always raise a smile."
Thanks.
"Keep up the great work and stay safe." We will.
I'm kind of guessing that this time next year, Jeff is no longer going to be a character in Coronation Street. So if he is going to be given any awards for his performance in Coronation Street in Bartholomew, then it does need to come pretty quickly.
Soon, please.
Otherwise, it's going to be too late.
Oh. They so deserve it. They so deserve it.
And it's one of these stories as well that, like, six, seven, 8 months ago, it didn't feel like it would be the sort of story that everybody is talking about, because it was dripped in very slowly. And then, like Fiona said, a lot of people early on were saying, "Oh, why doesn't she just run away? This is silly. This is ridiculous." But it really has caught a lot of viewers' imaginations.
Yes.
And I think... out of what's been going on in Coronation Street in the past 6 to 8 months, this really has been the story that's, you know, the poster child for Coronation Street at the moment. And there's always one, isn't there, that this is the story that gets nominated for everything, like the Bethany. I suppose there's a Sinead Cancer, isn't there?
I forgot about that one. Yeah, but this is the thing. We were talking about it, and we were saying that we hope they get rewarded. But we were also concerned because in the past, characters and actors have done amazing work on a story only to be overlooked by other characters or actors because they are younger.
Yeah, no, I'd forgotten. It's a tricky one because they can't not give awards to Katie McGlynn and Rob for that story.
The thing is, it was a really great story, and obviously I didn't watch it, so I'm not a very good judge of it, but it doesn't feel like anyone's talking about it anymore.
No, you're right.
Like in the past, when there's been an extremely outstanding story, it's had legs and it's lasted for a longer time. I know we had all the aftermath with Daniel, but I've not seen anyone talking about, like, you know, I mean... Obviously, it's never going to have had the same impact as, like, the Karna stuff.
I suppose,
but if you take that for an example of a story that people will not shut up about.
I mean, I think the fact that they've got Daniel and Beth away in Scotland on that grief
doesn't
retreat.
Help, is it? Yeah.
No, maybe when he comes back, it'll be brought up again. But
yeah, that's the only thing. That's the only thing that gives me pause. But yeah, like I said,
I would like there to be a story with some of the older actors and characters being shown some recognition.
Yes, exactly.
You're right. It is often the younger ones that
yeah, it is. It really is, and it's not right. And
it's not right that's be the main reason. I'm sure it wouldn't be, but well, I think
there's bias on both sides. There's bias on behalf of the story, you know, the bosses and everything, because they know these people are going to be getting all of the attention, so they get put them in more stuff, and then the awards people, the same thing, because they recognise that a lot of the awards show things are watched by younger viewers, I'm sure. I really think so. And it's driven by social media and it generates chat. And with the best will in the world, people are more interested in those that are similar to themselves. So the younger people on social media are going to be interested in the storylines with younger people in them and talk about those more. I don't know. I'm just really hoping that they get what they deserve, which is awards.
I'm just relishing there being lots of stories for the older characters at the moment, what with the Stillwater stuff, the Evelyn story, Jeff and Yasmin.
You're enjoying it.
Fun at the moment. Right, Rebecca, on last week's Corrie says that it was another great week on Street, and front and centre of that was the Jeff and Yasmin storyline. Jeff is really starting to annoy me, and the fact that he's using escorts too doesn't surprise me. I bet he'll reveal this to Yasmin and say he can always get someone better, and Yasmin will beg and grovel. Yeah, he could just literally,
I don't know,
come out and say, I'm going to see my other...
The thing is, I can imagine that being something that Yasmin wouldn't accept.
I think that she would.
But she chucked Sharif out for cheating.
I know, but she hadn't been, you know, beaten down and battered mentally by that time. She
but
was still...
the thing is, the reason how... One of the ways that Jeff's controlling Yasmin is by tricking her into thinking that they have such a great relationship and he's such a brilliant, fantastic husband, and she's the one that's doing everything wrong.
Well,
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It's really interesting, and the fact that it's not just predictable and we don't know what it's going to do next, even though there are, you know, abusers, and the way he's acting is a very well-established...
He'll get his comeuppance somehow.
That's not what I'm saying. The way he's acting has been firmly established by researching abusers and people talking about it and sharing information. But his actual actions aren't always that predictable. Even though you can look back on it and say, yeah, that was part of this process.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Rebecca continues, thank goodness for Alia. Serkan is doing a great job. Her hurt when she can't make Yasmin see the truth about Jeff. You can see it. And I bet he did hit his old girlfriend. I wonder if we will ever see her.
Mm.
Loved the whole washing hands to show control, but really fitted into what's happening in the world. Great work. Also, really enjoyed the Evelyn story. Maureen Lipman is just brilliant, and loving her romance to quote Fizz with Arthur. Although it's just a little distracting because he is in Last Tango in Halifax, which the last series was just said. He's all over the place, this guy. I also recognised him from Downton 2. I'm going to bet he had to take...
And here's a spoiler.
I'm going to bet that he had to take Kendall to the vets, and that's why he couldn't meet her. I can't remember what... No, that's not what happened in the end.
There's definitely... We forgot to mention this earlier. There's definitely something dodgy going on as to why he wasn't there.
I think he just said it was because he was feeling embarrassed about himself.
Do you believe that for a minute? Because I don't.
Yeah, I do, actually.
Do you? I don't think so. I think there's something more to it.
I think he's a nice and humble gentleman.
This is a soap, Michael. Mm. He was murdering his wife.
Also, loved the Evening and Claudia scene and Hope wanting Cerberus to be stuffed. I even enjoyed the Gemma story this week, and Bernie didn't annoy me at all.
What?
Jane and Dolly did some great mother and daughter scenes, and I even guessed that Gemma was going to get postnatal depression. The two
in the awards
last year. The two girls still annoy me, though, although I did enjoy Bernie calling them out on their fake snobbery. This is the mums.
Vanessa and Imogen.
Yes. Yeah, some people have very handily put on our Facebook groups and pictures so that we could tell who was who. Well, we didn't need them this week, so they didn't appear. Great to see Norris back, and I loved his scenes with Ken. The Stillwater scenes, even though they were short, I enjoyed them. I'm really feeling sorry for Emma, and even though I'm probably rooting for her and Seb more, she's just Raquel for the modern era, so we'll get her heartbroken time after time.
Good observation.
I do like Alina and Seb, so I'm happy with either couple. Hmm. I loved the apartment scenes, especially when Emma said she was joking that Tracy was her evil stepmom, then said she wasn't joking.
Oh, no, she's so
also
good.
Loved Abby saying something about rice and chips because Tracy now swings both ways. And yes, I foresee something happening between David and Alina. It reminded me a bit when Tina and Peter started talking, or when Molly and Kevin went jogging. Yeah, exactly the same. Character of the week has got to be Evelyn, and I give it 4 half rice, half chips out of 5. Thank you, Rebecca.
See, that's not a great analogy because...
What,
you wouldn't be eating chips and rice with the same meal. It's more like, I think, rice or chips or bread. Because sometimes you can have a chip butty and it's really nice.
Final email this week, Gemma. We have got from Chico. What does he have to say?
After watching yesterday's episode of Coronation Street, I'm really hoping that Alina does not continue a relationship or any kind of hookup with David. I feel like as genuine as that character is, he exists to mess with people. He just, once he loses something, just decides to atomic bomb every relationship, every neighbour he has. Don't get me wrong, I understand his desire to lash out, but it seems like every time something bad happens, he lashes out worse. See? That's what I was saying. She says, Carly died, he lashes out hard. Shona wants to divorce him, he lashes out harder. I have to say, as much as I dislike how aggressive Gemma is as a character, I feel bad for her with the postnatal depression, but where she really irritates me is I honestly still don't feel like she is a good match for Chesney. I feel like there are better people that had existed on the street previous to her being on it that just make more sense. In fact, she would be better suited with Seb than Emma is. Just my thoughts for the week.
Yeah, I'm not... I mean, the Ches and Gemma relationship was kind of built up for years and years and years, and there were lots of people just assuming that they'd eventually get together just because they...
banging the drum for it.
Yeah, and then they were getting on well in the kebab shop, but...
And everyone knows if you get on well with someone in a kebab shop, the next step is 4 babies at once.
It's got to be, hasn't it? Yeah. But it feels to me like they're setting them up to be like a Fizz and Tyrone sort of relationship that they'll just kind of stay comfortably together because...
I hate it.
I don't see either of them...
I don't see them either of them...
to get divorced or not being bothered to.
It's
a bit too much effort for Chesney.
Because they're so bland, there would be no catalyst for it.
Mm. Yeah. And they've got their kids to think about now as well anyway.
Well, they could take 2 each.
Oh, yeah, handy. Right, thank you everybody for listening to this week's podcast. Bit of a short one this week because there was only 4 episodes of Coronation Street. And don't forget, there are only 3 on next week. So we've got a new schedule starting. So it's going to be on at 7:30, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. But we will still be here with the podcast, giving all our thoughts about what's been going on.
You can't stop it.
If you would like to send us an email in, we're at conversationstreet@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube. This week's YouTube video upload was Cilla Battersby Brown. We did the character profile of her back in episode 119, I think, which is just when Cilla was returning to the street. So we re-uploaded that this week. Don't know why we picked her, just did. Thank you for everybody who supports us on Patreon. You enjoyed the Bad Mums episode last week, speaking of Cilla Battersby Brown. And also Patreon, we are really trying for the people in the Rovers tier to get these physical gifts out to you, which are a part of it. But we've had
so
many emails back and forth with the company trying to produce them, and then they emailed this week saying,
they can't do it
at the moment. So it is going to happen if anyone's been wondering about that.
We're going to see what we can do. Yeah, it's obviously more difficult now.
There are roadblocks getting in our way at the moment.
Yeah.
If you haven't reviewed us on iTunes yet and you have got an Apple device, we'd really, really appreciate it if you did give us 5 stars
like
and
it.
Say how lovely the podcast is, just to help
lovely.
Other people find it.
Yeah.
And it puts a smile on our face. It
does.
Everybody likes that. Right. Our bonus podcast this week is going to be a listener question. So if you
enjoy that, unless you already enjoyed it,
same time, so
you'd have to do it again if you don't want to.
Exactly not. But until then, thank you everybody for listening. We'll be
thank
back
you.
Next week. Thank you. Goodbye. Cheers. Farewell and ta-ra. And the music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.